The following is a production of the Pritzker Military Museum and Library. Made possible in part by the support of the Marine Corps Scholarship Foundation.
Welcome to Citizen Soldier, Into the Fire with Dakota Meyer and Bing West. This program is coming to you from the Pritzker Military Library in downtown Chicago and is made possible by the Marine Corps Scholarship Foundation and the Pritzker Military Library. Special thanks to our broadcast partner, WTTW Channel 11 here in Chicago. Later on, we'll be taking questions from our studio audience and from those of you joining us on the internet at PritzkerMilitaryLibrary.org. This program is a conversation between two remarkable men, co-authors of a new book, Into the Fire, a firsthand account of the most extraordinary battle in the Afghan War. Please join me in welcoming to the Pritzker Military Library award-winning author Bing West and Medal of Honor recipient Dakota Meyer.
Welcome to the Pritzker Military Library's Citizen Soldier, produced in partnership with the Marine Corps Scholarship Foundation. I'm Bing West. Today's program is about the highest military award America can bestow upon those acts of valor that are above and beyond the call of duty.
The Medal of Honor is America's highest military award for valor in combat against an enemy force. It was authorized by President Lincoln in 1861, created to honor servicemen who distinguished themselves through conspicuous gallantry and intrepidity in action during the Civil War. The first was given to Private Jacob Parrott for a daring raid known as the Great Locomotive Chase. In 1865, Dr. Mary Walker became the first and only woman to earn the medal for her service as a surgeon in the line of fire. Since its inception, more than 3,400 Medals of Honor have been awarded, most of them posthumously. There are three different versions of the medal, one for the Army, Navy, and Air Force. Members of the Marine Corps and Coast Guard are eligible to receive the Navy Medal. Most recipients of the Medal of Honor are nominated and approved through the chain of command. Members of the U.S. Congress may also nominate service members for the medal. The President of the United States, on behalf of Congress, typically presents the Medal of Honor in a solemn ceremony at the White House that represents the gratitude of the American people.
I am joined by the first living Marine to receive the Medal of Honor in 38 years, Dakota Meyer. When I first met Dakota, we were in a small hooch and inside a very small base. And we had just shaken hands when a few rounds went whipping by outside. Now, that happens a lot, and you generally let the guards handle it. But the next thing I knew, Dakota was out the door, and he leaped into the turret of this Humvee and was immediately in a firefight with a sniper on the ridge behind him. And I thought, I had heard things about Dakota, but actually watching how quickly he moved into action, I thought, this is going to be interesting to hear this man's story about what happened that caused him to be known on this base as the Pit Bull. The Ganji Gal was at the end of a box canyon. And when you look at their houses, you immediately see that when you come into an area like this, where everyone lives in a stone house, if you think of it in terms of military terms, you're walking into a whole set of pillboxes. And so when the Afghan soldiers and the advisors came in, they were immediately trapped, immediately, with no way out. And no one was coming in to help them, and they couldn't get artillery fire. And against that background, Dakota came up and he attacked. But the interesting thing about Dakota's attack was it was only Dakota. When I showed you the prior picture of Dakota up in the turret, he was the only target moving on the entire battlefield. Everybody else was down. I put together some clips of different battles that we've been in over there. But think, if every one of these weapons was pointed just at one person, but you get an idea of the amount of firepower that was coming in, how many people were trying to kill Dakota Meyer.
So we missed him. I mean, he was a nice shot for a minute.
Just cut round. We're going to cut round through there, through that entry and behind that mosque. on ground for Roger. No, Willie, you stay there.
Pretty good fight.
That was an RPG incoming. Here comes another one.
Whoa, damn.
Right over my head.
Get yourself spread out, boys.
Dakota was the object of everybody on the battlefield. There were about five or six machine guns and people using RPGs, and they were determined to kill this one individual. And so when he received the Medal of Honor, what I was struck with is that, as he said, it was the worst day of his life, not the best day, because he said as a Marine, all he wanted to do was get those four men home. And by the time the battle was over, they had been killed. Dakota and I will talk back and forth a little bit, and then we'll just open it up for questions from all of you. But you probably could start with, you know, how did this come about? Well, it came about that Dakota knew me, and I had been up there. And gradually, there were so many different stories that were wrong about what Dakota had done that he got fed up with it. And he finally called me up one day, and he said, you know, Bing, I have to write my own book. You know, how about pitching in, helping me write it? Because I want to tell my own story. I'm tired of people saying one thing or another. I just want to get it out there. So I said, well, you know, I can talk to you about firefights. There won't be any problem there. I said, but I don't want to hear anything about your sex life. And Dakota looked at me for a minute, and I knew this was the beginning of a strange relationship. He said, don't worry, sir. I don't think you know what sex is anymore. And then we started, right? Then we started.
This is what I have to put up with. So it was definitely a struggle. And you know, and it's hard to write a book because, well, number one, I did it with Bing West. But, you know, the second thing is it's hard to go back through the worst day of your life. And I think when we think about it, you know, when I tell, if I sit here and told you the story of the whole day, I would miss so many details because it's over 6 to 8 hours. And I come back, and it would be confusing to you because I tell you the story, and then all of a sudden I remember that triggers something that I remember from back at the start of the story. So you're looking at me going, is this guy crazy or what? So after Bing finally got it in the paper, and I went through and read it in the chronological order, I mean, it's just, I was like, well, what? How could this have happened? You know what I mean? It's like, finally, it makes sense to me. And, you know, but it's definitely been a big help. To be able to do this and to have Bing to be there and advise me and help me do this. And it's been a headache.
The battle began at 5:30 in the morning with about 60 or 70 Afghan soldiers and 15 advisors against 40 to 60 insurgents that had come over from Pakistan. And they were set up because everyone knew they were coming. And they were hiding in the houses, but ordinarily these insurgents didn't do that. So this time they were all over the place, and then by the second hour, when the artillery wasn't fired to help them because of our counterinsurgency rules, you can't fire at a village. Holy smokes, the village is firing at them. All the villages joined in. It was interesting. They piled in because they thought, oh, this side's going to win. And so they began to build fighting holes for the insurgents and put the rocks out there to protect them and then carry the ammunition cans. So suddenly you didn't just have 60 insurgents, you had many more. And it was difficult for you on the battlefield, I gather, to decide who was who.
No, it was. I mean, you know, so you get in there and you go in and you obviously have the insurgents who were going to be there, as Bing said, at the get-go. But then it's like this village had seen that that the Taliban was winning. So it's like, hey, let's take advantage of it. So you go from 40 to 60 guys to 150 guys immediately. And we quickly realize this whenever we come around a corner and there's people scattered, I mean, going everywhere. And I'm sure you can imagine at one point the Humvee's in there and these guys get so close to they're trying to, like, rush my Humvee. And I'm standing on top of this thing, and I don't know if they don't understand like who's dominant at the time. But if I'm there in a armored Humvee with a 50 cal pointed straight at you, you shouldn't run in a straight line at my truck. You know what I mean? But I mean, but what does that tell you? Number one, that's how dedicated these guys were. I mean, these guys were dedicated. So then what they decided to do was come from both sides. And I remember hearing over my earbud on the radio, "Your truck's surrounded." And I wanted to look back, pardon my language, and say, "No shit." But it was getting so fast to where I couldn't crank my turret because I was shooting the guys on this side and they were coming from both sides that I would have to grab my M4 and shoot back over the backside. And the driver was driving back and forth to hit guys to keep them from jumping. They were trying to jump on the truck and get me. At one point, I'll never forget, this guy had rushed while I was trying to get a guy behind me, had rushed so close to the vehicle and was trying to open the doors of the truck. And my 50 caliber machine gun was hitting the side of the top of the truck and was still shooting over the top of his head. So then I had to use my M4 to come over the top of the Humvee, and that's the scene that I've got in there. I mean, I remember myself laughing. I was laughing the entire time because I couldn't believe that how could I have got in a situation like this? You know, I mean, what else are you going to do? You know, I Rodriguez Chavez, you know, by far one of my
driver.
Closest friends, he's the driver, now a gunnery sergeant. He was driving back and forth, and he just kept saying, I keep remembering him screaming at me, "I just ran one over, homie." I'm like, oh, man. You know, so it almost took the reality out of it, and we're just laughing. And every time a rocket would come in, I would just hold on to the machine gun even tighter because they were launching rockets at us. And every time one would come in, I would just, because you know, you hear the screeching noise, you know, like a bottle rocket. And even though you try to like duck from it, it doesn't matter. It would have already hit you. So I'm holding on to the machine gun, and I would close my eyes every single time that those rockets went off. And he's like, "Phew, that one barely missed us." And, so that's the scene that we're in. And, and the whole time, everybody always likes to ask the question of, well, why did I keep going in? And I can tell you, there's a lot of Marines in here, and they'd say the exact same thing. But I can tell you the only reason that I kept going back in is because of accountability. And you ask why? Well, why accountability? Well, because, you know, no offense to any other branch in the military, the Army, the Navy, anything else, because we as Marines, and I told my scholars this today, we as Marines, we are called the few, the proud. And why do we call ourselves that? Because we truly believe that we are the best. Now, are we the best? I don't know. Sure, some of us are good, some of us aren't. You know, it's just like any other institution, but we have a culture that dictates that we will accept nothing less than being the best. We hold each other to a standard that we will do the best that we can and give our best and be the best for each and every guy around us. And with that being said, that's what carried me into the killing zone, because my guys that were in there trapped held me accountable to leave no man behind and to get them out alive or die trying. And that's what the Marine Corps does as an institution, is hold you accountable. And that's why I give my credit back to the Marine Corps. You know, any other service member in here, I want to say this up front. That medal that I wear around my neck is just as much theirs as it is mine. The only difference in any guy in uniform or a woman, anybody in here that's in uniform and me, is ask any of them how many chances they had to get the Medal of Honor. How many opportunities or situations were they presented to get the Medal of Honor? Zero. And you want to know how I know that? Because if they did, they would be wearing the exact same thing around their neck.
Well, while Dakota says that, there's this other side of him. He's kind of a hard head. And when he puts his mind to something, he does it. And he did disobey orders. But he disobeyed orders by going in the first instance. And maybe you just want to talk about that a little bit.
So sitting there and the firefight breaks out, I kept requesting to go in and bring the Humvee in and have an up gun and provide cover for them as they're moving out. And each time I was told no by the major and by the first sergeant. And finally, after a little bit, you know, I hear my lieutenant on the radio call in for a fire mission. And he said, spot on, perfect artillery support mission. And he said, the call back was, it's too close to the village. And he said, if you don't give me the rounds right now, we're going to die. And the response to him was, "We'll try your best." And so after that, I heard that, I knew it didn't matter. I couldn't care less about what I'm doing. I'm going in. So I told Rodriguez Chavez, I said, "You going in with me?" And he's like, "Well, I guess so." So he said, "You know, we're going to have to answer the mail for this." So we come in, and I just called over the radio. I didn't ask again. I said, "Be advised, Fox 33 is coming in." So as we start to head down this, I didn't know what was going on, but I knew I'd have to answer the mail for it. If I got in there and it wasn't a situation as bad as I thought, I knew that, you know, it wasn't going to be a good day for me. But I can tell you this, is I would rather be standing here today and answering for the consequences and my guys be alive than I would be sitting here and know that they're dead and I didn't try. And I got in there, and the scene, I couldn't imagine. I couldn't, like I said to you earlier, I gave you what was going on. But, you know, I went against orders because I knew that's what's right. Yeah, in the Marine Corps, we're taught to be obedient to orders and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, we're also taught what's right, honor, courage, and commitment. And that's more important than being obedient to orders. Because sometimes when orders aren't right, you have to do the right thing. And it's not always easy to do the right thing and make the decision to do it. And that's what it was.
The interesting thing is that later some smarmy reporter brought it up with the commandant and the assistant commandant, the four stars, and sort of said, you know, disobeying orders. And they looked at him and they said, you know, we considered that. And he did the right thing. So that was from the top. They said,
well, yeah,
because
you know he came out and he wanted to, he couldn't figure out why the Marine Corps didn't discipline me for disobeying orders that day. And, you know.
You do run into some bureaucrats. The other aspect was that there was no fire support provided because we had these orders from the top that we were out there to win hearts and minds. And you couldn't use fire support near a village. So throughout this entire, even when the commanders on the ground were asking for it.
I mean, this is where me and Bean go back and forth on it. You know, I'm sure everybody in this room has heard about rules of engagement. You've heard about problems with it. You know, I truly believe that it's not about rules of engagement. Rules of engagement is nothing but what we've made in the military, a cop-out answer for a leader to be held accountable for his actions. I never had one time that I asked permission to take a shot, to do anything like that. I never asked because usually if I had to request permission to take an enemy out, that there was probably another way that I could handle that situation. You know? And at the end of all, at the end of every rules of engagement, it states hostile act, hostile intent. Okay? So that's like a catch-all answer. So, you know, I believe that when we say, well, these guys didn't fire for us, our leadership didn't fire for us, was because of rules of engagement? No, that's not what it was. It's because of incompetent leaders being in charge and not being able to make a decision and support their men and do the right thing is what it is. Thank you.
And then, of course, we still have the dangling participle that Dakota has been trying desperately to get fixed, which is that when Dakota went to go back in at one point when he thought nobody else was coming in, he strapped on his gear and he was going to walk in by himself, the only human being. And so I'd like to have you tell us a little bit about Chief Warrant Officer Solano.
As I started to walk back in, this helicopter pilot comes over the radio, and I'd never met him before. And he said, "What are you, Fox 33? What are you doing?" I said, "Well, I'm heading back in." And he said, "Yeah, I don't believe that's a great idea right now." So I was like, "All right, well, I'll wait right here." And at one point in time, these guys opened up on me, and I remember I was trying to put this tourniquet on them, and Chief Warrant Officer Solano came in
He's
with his
pilot.
Helicopter. He's the pilot. He came in with his helicopter. And he said, "Fox 33, watch out." And he came around the side of this bend, and I'm telling you, it was from me to you. He opened up with his gun and took out some guys I didn't even see coming. And I could have jumped up and smacked the skid on his helicopter. Like, that's how, I mean, you know, I'm just laughing. I mean, I can't stop laughing because I'm like, oh, well, this is the end of my life, you know, so let's get this on. And But come to find out, you know, I've talked to Chief Warrant Officer Salino, and he's an Army guy. And guess what? I met him a few weeks later. You know, I went down and I thanked these guys because I don't think that our support hears it enough. Thank you so much for what you do. They never get to see the actual impact that they make on the battlefield, you know, whether it's anything from logistics or artillery. You know, they never get to see the impact of what they do to guys. And I went in, and I walked in, he said, this is a pilot. This guy's flying at probably 150, 200 miles an hour through a battlefield. And as I'm walking across his base, he said, Dakota Meyer. Or he said, Fox 33 is what he called me, Fox 33. I'm like, how did you know? He said, man, I was so close to you, I could see your face half the time. So, I thanked him for what he did. And, you know, me and him have become great friends. And he's, like I said, he was in the Army, but he was a prior Marine. And they had told him he couldn't drop below his flight deck of 300 feet. And he did that because he said, when I came over the radio and called in that there were four Marines missing, that he said he didn't care. He went against orders as well. So there was a lot of guys out there that showed so much, you know, so much help and did things that, you know, was extraordinary.
When you look back, as we wrap this up, Dakota, and you've received the medal, I haven't been out with you as you've been going around. What are the basic things that you try to get across? What have you taken away from all this?
Well, number one, I love to tell people that I'm not a Medal of Honor winner. I can't tell you how many times I say that. I hear, well, you won the Medal of Honor. Well, no, actually I didn't, because I didn't go out in a battlefield and do a run, jump, and duck, shoot competition. So it's a recipient. I didn't ask to receive the Medal of Honor. And to be honest with you, I'll just tell you all, I wear the Medal of Honor, and I feel like it is a stamp that is shown, it's a stamp on me and put me in the face of the nation as a failure. So that's how I view it. And that's what I told the president whenever he gave it to me. And I told him I didn't want it. But it's bigger. It's bigger because of all the men and women who are serving, all the men and women who have served, and all the men and women who are going to continue to serve and who have gave their lives for our freedom. If I can go out and use my platform to make a difference for them, then that's what I'm going to do. I don't wear the medal for me. To be honest with you, I don't even know where the medal's at right now. So don't tell anybody. You know, but my life has definitely changed. And I can say, don't envy me 100 anything. I'm 24 years old, and let me tell you, remembering that I'm a 24-year-old in the face of the nation is way out of question. You know, I went from being on a construction site getting a phone call from the president that I tried to miss, and to being a national figure overnight. You know, and that's not what I chose to do. I was a sniper, and even bigger than that, I was a United States Marine. And that's what it's about, is Marines and seeing Marines and being around Marines and representing them the best that I can and show the public that we are the best. And, you know, and how has it changed my life? Well, now I have security when I go places that are announced. I have lawyers who dictate everything that I do. I have agents who tell me what to do. I have a full-time assistant. I have accountants. I have all this when I didn't ask for it. But like I said, everything in life is bigger than us, and we just have to go out and stop looking at our life as situations, and we have to start seizing the opportunities that we have in front of us and make a difference. Thank you.
Questions from the audience.
My question is, how many rounds did you shoot when you fire?
I would say probably around 2,500 to 3,000 rounds. So I don't like to use numbers, because if a reporter sees that, they're going to come at me and say, well, how do you know you use 1,500 or 20,000? I don't know. You know, I keep getting asked the question of, I've got a reporter hit me of, well, how do you know you saved or killed this many guys? Well, I don't know. I wasn't in there with a clicker like, oh, got that one. it wasn't, you know, it's not like a point system set up. So, you know, it's insane the questions you get asked. But no, I would say 2,500, 3,000 rounds. So it was one of my lower days, to be honest. I've been in firefights on base that we've shoved off a lot of rounds.
At 24 years old, what would you consider your proudest moment?
Oh, I can tell you, it was actually today getting to meet the scholars that I give the Dakota Meyer Scholarship to, and that was probably the best thing that I felt like I've done, is being able to give back and make a difference in their lives, and hopefully let them go out and spread the word to do the right thing and set the example as well. And I would say that's probably the proudest thing that I've got to do.
Dakota, Captain Justin Medeiros is headed over to Helmland to lead Engelco Battalion with a battalion of Georgian military. And I'm wondering what advice you have for him with that joint operation perspective as he gets ready for his deployment.
You know, go over there with an open mind. You know, they're not going to be Marines. They're not going to be Americans. If they were, they would live here. They don't want to be Americans, which is fine. I'm not saying we're the best. But always understand that and learn as much as you can about them and respect them as people just like we are. Because, like I said earlier, we as Americans look at everybody else as like we're better than them. And it's sad that we do that because we're not. We're the same as anybody else. And they're fighting just like we are. So just go over with an open mind and just do what's right. Now, it's easy. If you'll wake up every day and do what's right and have an open mind, good things happen. You know? And you can always go home at night and look yourself in the mirror.
I'd like to thank Dakota for being here and for joining in this conversation. I think it's really been, you know, stimulating and gosh darn interesting. Thank you, Dakota.
This program was made possible by the Marine Corps Scholarship Foundation,
in partnership with the Pritzker Military Museum and Library.